Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible, make playlists, and help other states count their votes. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Ferris. I'm the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado Boulder.
Got a new senator.
New senator! Hick the Hick. Hick and Looper. Brewmaster General, former brewer, did not play for the team in Milwaukee, but opened a brewery in Colorado way before it was really fashionable to be a brewer in Colorado. Also a former geologist and likely still in the pocket of oil and gas. But congratulations to Governor, now Senator, Senator-elect Hickenlooper.
Is it going to be a new brew coming out, like some fancy labels?
Senator. I bet so. Matt, more importantly, though, congratulations to Sarah for Iowa. Sarah Trone Garrett, you are welcome. Got a little thing that we call the Vinyl Preacher Bump that carried you to the Iowa State House, State Senate. I don't even remember anymore, but you're welcome.
Yep, that's what happened. They've been talking about it on 538 all year, really, because I think it's been a while since we talked to her, but
Biden lost Iowa if he had come onto this podcast.
Right.
Would have carried it. We got a lot of sway in Iowa.
We're not saying that he would have won, but he wouldn't have not won. Oh my gosh. We thought we'd know by the time we were recording. Maybe not.
I don't think we thought we'd know, but I don't think we knew that we wouldn't know.
It's true. I told my worship team, I was like, we're planning worship for November 8th. I was like, we had to prepare for three scenarios. And I think they thought I was nuts. But I was like, we're either going to know, we're going to not know. We're going to know one way. We're going to know the other way. We're just not going to know at all. We could still not know. I don't know. This is nuts.
The State Senate, Matt. The State Senate. Sarah Trone Garrett, our former classmate, my former bandmate, former guest on the podcast, is now an elected member of the Iowa State Senate.
It's pretty great. It's pretty exciting.
District 22, which is my favorite district in the whole state of Iowa. Matt, they've been telling us. We'll get her on for that. Also, we need to get Wendy DeBoer, former classmate, state politician on the podcast. I talked to her the other day on the Facebooks. She's down in Nebraska as a state house, I guess it's called. It's unicameral. We all remember that. There's only one the legislative body in the state of Nebraska. It's the only state in the union that does that. And Wendy DeBoer, classmate of ours, is part of that body.
Wow. We're going to have to get on this train. Maybe that's our bivocational move.
We should definitely be political consultants.
Right now, Zach has a map behind him. You might think it's a map of the Electoral College in the United States, but instead, it is a map of the Electoral College in Mexico, which doesn't actually exist. But the states all have different colors because there are that many different political parties in Mexico. You got blue, green, yellow, fuchsia, orange, red. It's a tight race. Tight race in Mexico.
Yeah, I feel like people will probably with us. The listeners are with us with a discussion of the election in the States. I don't know.
How is this even going to land? Y'all going to hear this on Sunday, Monday?
Well, Matt, at this point, I mean, it is pretty conclusive. I think we can all say what happened is exactly what we thought would happen. And that's an old white man was elected president.
It's true.
In some ways, that was very surprising what happened. In some ways, it wasn't that surprising.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm at. Wow. Now that we have a definitive.
Indeed.
I'm here to celebrate. I'm glad we have a definitive result here as listeners are listening to this and as we record.
So I do want to say, I mean, it is amazing. Sarah elected. Vinyl Preacher bump. That's great. Amazing. Not a classmate. But fellow Reverend Raphael Warnock in Georgia going to a runoff in January. So just want to put it out there that if he is looking for a Vinyl Preacher bump, could come in the pod. He's a reverend at bit, Zach. He's a preacher. I'm sure he's got a playlist. I mean, come on the pod. You got nothing else to do for the next 8 weeks.
I think I have an in, Matt. I've got an in. I know somebody who definitely knows him.
Mm-hmm.
I just got 2 degrees separation. Former very active reverend in the political scene in Atlanta. Fellow alum of LSDC, not Reverend Warnock. Warnock.
Yeah.
There we go.
I've heard him preach a couple. He was at the Festival of Homiletics when it was in Atlanta. Surprise, surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And then he preached in Seattle for some reason when I was up there. But he's good. He's really good. As you might expect if you're preaching at Dr. King's former church.
Interesting. As someone who has preached in a pulpit that Dr. King has preached in.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah. How are you, Matt? You said before we started recording that you have been refreshing web browsers a lot.
Yeah, not great. Have not sleeping very well. Feeling. I would Tuesday. I was chill most of the day. I was like, I'm just gonna be really zen about it this time. And then I was like, let's just go to the beach in the evening. Let's not. I don't want to do this to myself. Like, we're probably gonna get another results for a while. It's gonna be like, no. Let's not do this. Let's just tune out. But I forgot to hit do not disturb on my phone, and I started getting texts from my family. Doesn't look good. And then I just it was rough. It was rough. I was so stressed out. So, yeah, just hanging in there. I have been, 4 years ago, had a little freak out, just posting every 5 minutes about how upset I was. And I'm better at that this year. I'm, stirred up. This is not the result, the massive repudiation that we wanted. But, just going to be balanced about it, focused on the work that we can do, and that's what we're going to do. See? Zen. Zen. In between clicking refresh on my phone every 5 minutes, I'm zen.
Where are you clicking refresh on the internet, Matt?
The 538 live blog.
Yeah, that's the best one.
I mean, they gave us such great predictions of this 90% landslide victory that I just keep refreshing that live blog.
Again, we all need to take a statistics class as a nation and understand how statistics work.
I know. It was well within the realm of possibility. Although, you do have to say, like the thing, they're all going to go after Nate Silver, but they're just aggregating these polls and putting them...
It's not their numbers, right?
The real problem is the polls, like, mm-hmm. which do seem to be off again, which is kind of weird. But anyway, yes, statistics.
I feel, Matt... I've not definitely not like enjoyed the past couple of days, and found it frustrating, and the dissonance between intellectually, listening to entire podcasts that were about, hey, we're not going to know for a couple of days, and knowing that versus the lived experience of that.
Yeah, it's
different. But also, it feels like more of the same, right? Like I was able to accept this pretty quickly. They're like, oh, we really aren't going to know for a couple of days. So I'm not going to get this future, definitive future that I've like been longing for in a lot of different ways in my life. So it feels like just like waiting, like pandemic waiting too. Like, oh no, we just have to like keep being uncomfortable every day until one day magically we won't be uncomfortable anymore or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Nate, our friend Nate, also, Nate, you have an open invitation to come on the podcast. One of the things that he said in the run-up that I thought was really, that now seems even more compelling, right, is a part of his frustration as, by the way, Matt, we were very right. I don't know if we said on the podcast or in personal conversations, saltiest dude ever in the week before every podcast, 538 with Nate Silver. He was just like, everybody's an idiot. But he was frustrated with the public's desire to have, for definitive answers, for certainty, that's what he used.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always anxiety around elections, locally, nationally, presidential and not, and there's that desire for certainty, but perhaps even more so this year, man, I'll take any certainty I can get because there's none around.
Yeah, I know. But we live in this liminal space instead.
We
don't love it? It's a liminal space. Sounds great in theory.
Doesn't it? I've spent the afternoon, Matt, scrubbing through season 5 of Veep. I'm hosting with my good friend Seth Reeder, the director of Hillel at the University of Colorado. We're hosting a second of our sessions on interfaith conversations around civics and voting. We have one before the election, and of course we assumed that we'd have one tonight after the election when everything is super definitively solved. But we're going to watch that clip from season 5 of Veep where the Selina Meyer team first wants to make sure that every vote in Nevada is counted. And then when they're leading, they want to stop the recount, and the lawyers like switch sides immediately midstream.
That could never happen in real life. What?
And it's funny, right? And like perhaps there is a particular partisan party that is doing that out of both sides of the mouth at the moment. But right, like, I don't want votes to be counted that aren't votes that will help my outcomes come, you know? So we're hoping to help students draw upon their religious traditions to influence their perspective on vote counting and counting, and to maybe in that have some sort of constructive, productive debate where when those political opinions are built upon religious traditions, perhaps there might be more mutual respect than if we're yelling at each other outside of a random government building.
Good job. Way to do your job.
There's a hilarious and awful line where Selina Meyer says, "You need to stop this recount like it's Anne Frank's bat mitzvah."
Oh, God. Oh, wow. Veep.
The... Veep, hilarious. I also forgot exactly how crude it was as I like watched
it's really,
it. For, even for like something I'm going to show like college students on our very not puritanical campus, I'm like, oh, can I?
Yeah.
Can we? But the listeners, Matt, they wrote in, and we do have some definitive results. You talked about one of them. We have a new senator here in the great state of Colorado. Also, a big news here in the state of Colorado, the Board of Regents, which governs the University of Colorado system and has been under Republican control. It's a partisan Board of Regents with 9 members, has been under Republican control since 1970, and it flipped for the first time. That was one of the really dissonant parts of being at the University of Colorado is... In Boulder, at least, an institution that prides itself, you know, like to be in the neighborhood of like your Berkeley's being governed by Republican Board of Regents has flipped and now is under Democratic control for the first time in 50 years. One of the former wow. regents was a member at House for All Sinners in St. Steve, who Ludwig, who hung out with our students one night a while back when he was on the Board of Regents. But that's interesting. But the most important result is in, Matt. It was very close. It was as close. And there might be a recount, but there was a concession today in this issue because we had a lot of propositions, amendments, and it was really interesting for those of you who don't live in a direct democracy state. Let me reinforce how bad of an idea it is. It's just really bad, right? Like, while a blue wave did not happen across the country, it happened in the state of Colorado. There's only no Republican won a statewide office. No Republican has won a statewide office since Cory Gardner was elected as senator 6 years ago. We did have a QAnon supporter who took a congressional seat. That's the only glimmer of hope. And yet, because direct democracy is so weird, it was a complete mixed bag along partisan lines on like the propositions. So we adopted we lowered our taxes because that was a thing, right? And so we gave a huge tax cut to wealthy people, a proposition that Lutheran Advocacy Ministry did not support. But the issue everybody cares about, it took multiple days, but the votes are finally in. And today, this afternoon, I saw it. There was a concession. Colorado voted in favor of gray wolves. They're coming back. Under the direction of the people of the state of Colorado, because they're the people who should definitely make this choice, are random people voting either in favor or against gray wolves. But the gray wolf is coming back, which paves the way for the initiative that Peter Severson and Lutheran Advocacy Ministry Colorado will pursue, or they are a bunch of cowards, and that is the reintroduction of the Colorado grizzly bear.
Is that a thing?
What? I mean, we're making it a thing. There have been advocates for it, obviously, but it's a similar... it is nowhere near as likely to happen, in part because the gray wolf... Are we really doing gray wolf talk? The gray wolves have already come back to Colorado. Gray wolves have a larger range than grizzlies. So there have been gray wolf packs in Wyoming coming down from Yellowstone. And last year they were recorded that there was a wolf pack now in Colorado. So people who were against the amendment said, hey, we don't need to do it because they're already back. And gray wolves are not as scary as grizzlies, but there are people who, like myself, who are in favor of reintroducing the grizzly in Colorado. It's been supported at various times from wildlife departments and like administrations nationally and stuff, but it's very unlikely and far away. But if Peter Severson and I get on this as a part of our new political consulting group, I think we can make it happen.
Nick, if we could use the theme music, U2's Raised by Wolves, for that mini pod, it'd be great.
Is this another wolves. Episode of Let's Talk About Wolves?
Yep.
I would ask that we use, at least for the outro, use the Mountain Goats' Up the Wolves.
So many good options. Mm-hmm. We should just start a whole new podcast. Just had me thinking about the California grizzly that's on our state flag. You'd think if we could bring back the T-Rex with some mosquito juice, we could bring back the California grizzly.
I would think so, right? We also approved paid family leave in Colorado.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, the ballot initiatives are nuts because we are also in a deep blue state. Everybody knew California, big boost of electoral votes. But nearly all of our like progressive initiatives failed. Like it's all. If you need a proof, even more proof that America is just the politics are just tribalism. It's just tribalism. That's all it is. It's not really policy based. Check out the ballot initiatives.
As someone who actually was passionate about the gray wolf proposition, right? I don't know enough to make that decision. I shouldn't be making that choice. Okay, Lake.
Well, we started off today really focused, which is good. Makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a focused kind of week. I know I've been focused.
I made tacos on Tuesday, man. I didn't get to talk about that. That's what I did to avoid...
For election day.
Good election job. Anxiety. I made some really good tacos, man. Like, I went out, all out, Matt. I did crock pot carnitas overnight. So pork shoulder, and it just all fell off the bone. Beautiful. And then I had these tacos. Is this another episode of Taco Talk? I think it is. So we had the carnitas. Is that an airplane flying with a banner? Like, that says, stop the recount?
I think so. That's incredible. Welcome to California.
There's a great taco shop up in Minturn, Colorado that has a taco called Hippie Crack that's vegetarian that Hannah really loves and is really good. And I tried to recreate it, Matt, and I did a pretty okay job for my first time. Red potatoes cut into small pieces, sauteed them. It takes a while, right? So you get them fried nice and crispy. And then a crema sauce, right? That I made from scratch. So I took heavy whipping cream, dropped a little bit of buttermilk in there, let it sit for 24 hours so that it could ferment up a bit, dropped a couple chipotle peppers in there, hit it with the immersion blender, and chilled, and you got a nice, thick, slightly spicy crema sauce on top.
Wow.
And then we had churros. I bought churros from the best taco shop in Boulder County, and they gave us a mixture of them, and they were the filled kind. Mm. They had three different fillings, but there was no way to tell which one you were going to get. So that was the most fun.
Nice.
It was a lovely distraction.
There were some churros in a children's book I was reading my kids, and Maya said, Daddy, we should make those sometime. And I said, those are things you buy.
You should. It seems like a lot of work for...
Right?
A churro that lasts 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And today I had a soggy three-day-old churro. Not that good. Did I eat the whole thing? Yeah. Obviously.
Wow.
It was in a church kitchen.
Wow. Well, speaking of elected officials, or non-elected officials, the elected? I guess it depends on the meaning of election.
The elect, in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Officials.
Judges.
Of the elect. Judges.
Zach is so excited that we're in Judges.
Oh, I got problems with this, man.
It's just a pit stop. See, at this point, it's like, you know, we started out the road trip through this part of the Bible, and we're kind of like, we're hitting some big, like, you know, roadside attractions along the way in Genesis, and then in Exodus, we knew we had our whole, and then it feels like we get past Exodus, and we just have to get to our destination. So we're gonna have a pit stop here in Judges, but then we gotta keep going. We gotta keep going because we gotta get to, I don't know, Zechariah or something. I don't know where we're going, but
Ezekiel,
we're going
next week.
Ezekiel,
Matt, like, we gotta get there. So we have made a choice, dear listener, if you're not super intimately aware of how the lectionary works, that during quote unquote ordinary time, you get to choose one or two Old Testament readings, one version, one track where the Old Testament reading is intentionally supposed to be complementary to the gospel, and the other is semi-continuous that tells some sort of like linear story, and we traditionally choose semi-continuous so that we can keep telling these narratives that are kind of fun for us during the summer. This year, it's so semi-continuous. Just emphasizing the semi, but it's not like, oh, it's more or less a straight line. No, we went the first half straight line, and then the second half, they're like, no more continuous. We've already spent all of our continuousness, and now we're just hopping around. We were like, let's do one story from Deuteronomy, one from Joshua, now one from Judges.
I mean, it's continuous in the sense that it's not like they're going. They're not backtracking. They're still making their way across the country. They're on the freeway. We're just not making very many stops anymore.
It's
like,
true.
We had, how many stops did we have in Genesis? Like, it was the whole summer. And then Exodus takes like 2 months. And then now we're going. We're going. We got to get to that destination to get those date checks before it closes. That's the pace that we're at.
We are moving west to east, Matt. We were going through states like Utah and California, in Colorado and Kansas, that take days, you know, journeys. And now we're on the East Coast and we are just like, oh, that was Delaware.
Yeah. Yep.
I think we were just in Delaware, you guys.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
Was that Rhode Island?
Yeah, the only thing comparable in the West is when you're going from Chicago to Seattle, and Idaho takes about 30 minutes. So you're just that little panhandle of Idaho. But yeah. Well, anyway, we're in Judges, so there's that.
This is, Matt, I did the research because I got fussy about it. This is the only reading from Judges in the entire lectionary.
It's insane. I can't believe we don't get Samson. It's such a classic story.
That is crazy that there's no Samson. Like,
what's the psalm today? Do we get a psalm or do we get the song of Deborah?
I think we have a song. I will check and make sure, Matt.
Because the thing is, since I don't
123.
Use the lectionary in this season.
123, classic.
We
to you, I lift my eyes up to the hills.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Isn't that
I guess it fits Deborah as well. But the thing I was gonna say, so Deborah has a song too. So she does mm-hmm. this. This is like a little opening, and then there's a really gross thing that happens. There's a peg through a head in a tent. It's fantastic. It's a great Sunday school story. If you need a children's sermon, you might want to do that one. And then she sings a song, and it starts better than it ends because it gets also pretty dark. But, you know, still, she's got a song, all right? She's got a song. I thought it was really... So we covered the story in my non-lectionary series a couple months ago, and it's interesting because I did teach Sunday school on this. And Deborah, so she sits under... Oh, we should read the story first, huh? Well, then I'll come around and do that. So Deborah, she sits under this palm tree. And so if you look up Deborah in like a children's Bible, she's always under a palm tree. Like all the pictures of her, she's under a palm tree. It's like her thing. It's great. So Judges 4:1-7. The Israelites again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Again, after Ahud died. After
Ahud died,
that was also...
I believe it was last week where we reestablished the covenant, right? And Joshua's like, you're all in, right? We're going to really do it this time. Yep. And this reading, the next week we begin.
So again,
and the Israelites again failed.
See, it fits. It's continuous. Ehud, is Ehud the guy where they stab him in the stomach
fat
and
guy,
it swallows
belly,
up?
Yeah.
Is it that guy?
Bathtub.
I think so. So many good stories in Judges. Judges would be a great HBO series. So the Lord sold them into the hand of King Jabin of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Hagoyim. Then the Israelites
well
cried
done,
out to the
man.
Lord for help.
Harosheth Hagoyim.
I'm just doing what I tell my readers to do. Just pick a pronunciation and go with it. Don't
I think
slow
you
down.
Nailed it, though. That you was know. Great.
Then the Israelites cried out to the Lord for help, for he had 900 chariots of iron and had oppressed the Israelites cruelly for 20 years. Man, you think 4 years is long. 20 years. At that time, Deborah, a prophetess, wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel. She used to sit under the palm of Deborah. She even named it the palm of Deborah. Incredible. Between Ramah and Bethel.
Which way was
the
naming working?
Of Ephraim. And the Israelites came up to her for judgment. She sent and summoned Barak, son of Abinoam, from the Kedesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go, take position at Mount Tabor, bringing 10,000 from the tribe of Naphtali and the tribe of Zebulun. I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the Wadi Kishon with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him into your hand." Is that really where it ends?
That's where the reading ends, in the lectionary.
Why does it end there? So then what happens?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Matt. That's the problem with this being the only judge's reading.
Barak is like, what? Like, there's a lot of people. I don't want to do that. Barak is terrified to do this thing. And so he's like, well, if you will go with me, I will go. But if you don't come with me, I'm not going. So it's a real, like, are you going to that party? I don't know. Are you going? It's a really... And she
kind
says...
Kind of a Moses Aaron thing.
I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman.
Oof.
Then Deborah got up and went with Barak to Kedesh. Barak summoned Zebulun and Naphtali to Kedesh, and 10,000 warriors. They counted them. It took time to count these warriors. There were 10,000 on the dot. Went up behind him, and Deborah went up with him. That's where it should have ended.
Dear listener, you can make that choice.
You don't like it. Tell us why you don't like it, Zach.
Well, it's that there is this whole Deborah story, first of all, and you don't get to... Like, if you're going to spend your entire sermon telling the rest of the story, which maybe that's okay, but I don't think it is. I mean, it's fine, right? But the story itself, I don't think is that compelling, right? Like, it... Because it just leads to military victory, and, like...
That's probably a lot of these
stories. I don't find military
stories.
Victories in the Bible to be, like, the source of good news.
Good point. It feels like that's a lot of what comes after Exodus, right? You get this big liberation, and then starting with Joshua, it's like a lot of military victories.
Yeah.
But that's the way this story is told, so you got to figure out something to do with that. I guess you got to metaphorize it or something. Or maybe you don't. You just deal with how gross it is. I don't know.
So the story that I think that I'm going to use tonight at my interfaith meeting about counting and like how counting votes, my opinion on counting votes might be grounded in my religious tradition. It's actually the Christmas story. So spoilers if you don't want to hear how the Christmas story goes. Right, so Mary and Joseph got to go way down south to Bethlehem to be counted because there's a census. And in very romantic terms, the empire says all the world must be counted. And this is, I'm pretty sure I stole this from Craig Satterley. I'm sure I said it on the podcast before. One of the interesting things about the Roman census is there was no category for infants. So little baby Jesus was not counted in the census. There was not a category of infants because the infant mortality rate was really high. So there's very little chance of them growing up and surviving to adulthood. And so the twist of that story is the one that is uncounted is the one who counts the most. That's the fun homiletic twist you get to do, right? So I would say, right, our religious tradition is planted in this idea that the ones we are likely not to count are the ones that count the most, so we must count even the unlikeliest of voters, of votes, of leaders. And so if you're going to read that into this story, perhaps I am imagining here the King Jabin of Canaan was probably like a real king. He had like how many iron chariots? That's a lot. 900 iron chariots. That is a lot of people. I doubt the numbers here. It's all hyperbole because 10,000 people at the village.
What?
Maybe if the village was that big.
You think there's voter fraud in these numbers?
You're bringing old ladies. You're bringing children with you, not warriors, right? Because if you had 10,000 warriors, your town would have like 100,000 people, and that would be 5% of the Earth's population.
Well, the thing is, the mail-in and absentee chariots, they're just going to come in at the... Oh, my God. Keep going.
And the military leader who takes down the king, who has all of the equipment and the technology, is an old lady who sits underneath a tree.
Nice.
I mean, that's the good news flourish and twist that I would lean into with this story. I don't know if Deborah's old, by the way. I'm sure she's not that old, but she'd have to be pretty old, I would think. Here we go. Because she strikes me, the whole idea of her sitting underneath a tree seems like that kind of cliche from literature and stuff, where there's like an old wise person who's kind of like hermit-like, and you go out to seek wisdom from the hermit, like in Lovecraft Country, where the Kamiho and her mom go to see the old, like kind of like witch doctor-ish sort of person who's living out far away, who has all the wisdom and stuff. So to be considered wise and stuff, I imagine you had to be older. But that's the vibe. That person, this like kind of, again, people who lived outside of city walls were outcasts. And it sounds like she's hanging out underneath this random tree is the one who takes down this great military power.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. There is, I think that makes sense as a reading. There's a really great children's book called The Gritty and Graceful 15 Inspiring Women of the Bible. It comes from some Sparkhouse, though, so it's not as bad as you might think with a title that has inspiring.
But Sparkhouse could be better, Matt. They could be better if they did a little better marketing.
It could be better. They should partner with us. But it's really good. And there's like one of these different women of the Bible on each page. And the one for Deborah is fantastic because she just looks, I don't know. But it just, she's fierce and she's riding this horse at the front of this like line of horses. And there's like Barack behind her looking like freaked out. And it's just, it's a great, great image that I'm glad my four-year-old girls are get to see. I think it's a good story. I think I like that. I like that take. I like that take. I feel like I also think, yeah, like if you're talking about the Christmas story, I mean, it made me think the fact that Deborah has a song, it makes me think mm-hmm. of the Magnificat, which also has like some pretty militant imagery, really. Yeah. Now she's not going to, now Mary's not going to have like this bloody military victory, but you can imagine her song inspired by some of these almost military songs. It reminds me of like the debates that, or the way we can wrestle with blood songs, and yet they can also be really powerful. I think a song like, which we did at my church for like 4th of July Sunday, was we did Battle Hymn of the Republic,
nice.
Which my church loves, the tune of John
song.
Brown's Body. It's a great song. It's a really militant imagery, but, you know, I think some of that stuff, I don't know. I mean, you just, there's a way in which it's reality too. And so, I don't know. It's both and.
No, you son of a.
We should just rename this the Both And podcast. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be great.
Was I subtweeting someone on Facebook with my attack of Both And? Yes, I was. But it was election week. I get to break down and be petty for a minute.
Oh. Okay. We got anything else on this?
I would just say that I'm not like, I think this supports my take, but just enough context, right? Like I obviously, right, love the image of Deborah riding a horse like a badass and that sort of feminist take. I think a big part of the story and why Deborah is a woman and a part of the power of the story for its original context was how insulting it would be for a woman to lead an army that is victorious over a king. So the fact that she's a woman is important, and I think it's fair to go with that like perspective of that. But also like the kind of conflicted history of it is like in the ancient Near East, in its context, it was probably, it's an insult, right? That it's as much an insult to the king as it is a lifting up of Deborah as a badass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? There's a... It's a both and, Zach. I'd say it's more of a... It's almost like a full circle thing where you can't... You know, like, very rarely, especially these... Well, any of these biblical texts are rarely one note. And so, yeah, if you're going to have a children's book, like, you got to have one picture. And so, like, it works, and you got to start somewhere. And then you're going to go around, you're going to go, oh, wow, actually, the story is, like, super complex, and it's really messy. And then you could come out the other side, I think, and ultimately have a really affirming gospel, right, in the midst of a story that is really messy. But you got to go all the way around that circle to get there.
Yeah.
There we go. Judges. We did it.
Well, Matt, speaking of complicated stories, we got a parable here. It's another one of those Anthropos parables, the parables of men. Jesus said, "It is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1. Oh, there's so much math this week, man. To each according to his ability. What does that even mean?
Is this like, right? Electoral votes? Is that what this, like, is? Are these electoral votes? Mm-hmm.
This is according to your ability, Wyoming. Then he went away. And the one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. And in the same way, the one who had 2 talents made 2 more. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. And after a long time, the master of those slaves came forward and settled accounts with them. And then the one to receive 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 5, and see, I have made you 5 more talents. And his master said to him, well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one of the 2 talents also came forward, saying, 'Master, you handed me 2 talents, and I have made you 2 more. His master said to him, well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many. Enter into the joy of your master. And then the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you did not scatter seed. And so I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours.' But his master replied, 'You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I do not sow and I gather where I do not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But those who have nothing, even what they have, will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is clearly the good news of Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
That totally sounds like the kind of thing Jesus would say, right?
Yeah. Like, so, for sure. I when people say, yeah, the Old Testament is pretty rough, but, you know, you get to the Gospels and Jesus just makes it all
better.
For example, Matthew 25.
Yeah. The Old Testament is just full of stakes through heads and swords in the belly of fat kings, but Matthew 25 is just like, hey guys, let's chill it out.
The end of Matthew, very chill.
Very super chill. Things that would not appear to our listening ears that would be quite shocking to Matthew's listeners' ears is that there's this whole thing in the Torah about usury. Our Muslim friends continue to believe that usury, right, which is the charging of interest, is against the law. It was against the Torah. So you've got 3 servants here, one of whom doesn't do anything with the money, keeps it safe, and the master comes back and says, well, you should have given it to the banker and violated the law and had the banker give you somebody. Because here's the reason it's against the law is they had this what Robert Molina called a limited goods economy. That was their understanding of the economy, which basically is the economy did not grow or get smaller. It was a certain size. And so when you took more money than was justly yours, you were taking it away from someone else. So charging interest, doing those sorts of practices, making money not through labor, was considered incredibly unethical because you were taking it away from someone else. So a parable where the servant who refuses to break the law is called unworthy, ungrateful, and thrown into the outer darkness would be incredibly striking to Matthew's audience, who was particularly Jewish, right? So I'm going to do what I did a couple weeks ago, because again, it is as if a man, the text emphasizes it. There are a couple keys here, important clues. We emphasize man again. It doesn't restate like the ones did before, where it's like, is there a landowner, a man? But this is an emphasis. Jesus says it is as if a man. So this is a story about a man and the kingdom of humans, perhaps, rather than the kingdom of heaven or kingdom of God, because the kingdom of heaven or kingdom of God is not mentioned in this story. God does not appear in this story. The kingdom of God does not appear in this story. So Jesus is telling all these parables that are about the kingdom of heaven, but sometimes perhaps is telling parables that contrast the kingdom of anthropos, the kingdom of humans, with the kingdom of kingdom of God and heaven. And that's what I think this is, right? And it is a story about how difficult it can be to live according to the kingdom of God when you're living also at the same time in the kingdom of humans, because this is what happens to you if you're faithful. And that would be pretty well known to the kinds of people Jesus is talking to the poor people who knew the reality that, thankfully, in our egalitarian society, we don't know anymore, that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Mm-hmm. That was something they actually knew about and would not be surprised by.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. It's one where you got to flip it on its head. So are you saying this isn't a stewardship text that just says you should give your money to the church?
It's a complicated text for us, right? Like, usury is clearly against the law and is bad, according to Jesus and the Bible. And I am not one who says that we should place our faith typically in the market, in market economy. And yet we don't live in a limited goods economy. We do. I do not believe we live in a limited goods economy. The economy can grow. I tend to think that the economy can grow in such a way that there's room for everyone in the economy, which is a pretty radical thing these days. But it sure is not a full endorsement of market-based economies and capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a pretty harsh criticism of it, right? Of unregulated capitalism. So depending on your congregation and stuff, right, it wouldn't be the worst. It could be a great conversation starter for getting into stewardship stuff if you're ready to get pretty complex with it. But
mm-hmm. I think, too, so
we have an endowment. That just,
that's really what this text is about. Endowments.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that catches my eye, I could see a preacher. I could see the Reverend Raphael Warnock doing something with this little detail. So he takes, you know, there's a lot of, there's imagery in here of sowing and reaping. Scattering seed, sowing and reaping. But instead of sowing like an actual seed, this guy digs a hole in the ground and puts money into it instead. And I just think that's, it's an interesting little detail, right? Like, what, I would play with that. Like, it's a metaphor, but then he like literally puts the money into the ground, which mm-hmm. is what you're supposed to do with seeds. That money is not going to grow an actual, like, I don't know. Dollar there's tree. Just an interesting dissonance to me there. That I feel like if you, mm-hmm. if you played with that image a little bit, that you could break it, you could break into it, and it would be kind of vivid, and you could do some interesting things. I don't know where you take it. I don't have that part figured out yet, but I would just kind of plant that seed, pun intended, for listeners. Just notice that little image that he digs a hole instead of putting an actual seed in, he puts coins.
So there are some Midrashic, some texts from the Midrash that say that the right and faithful thing to do is to, if you're entrusted with someone else's money, is to put it in a hole in the ground.
Hole in the ground.
Because having money was really hard, by the way, right? Like, especially for those of us who no longer carry any cash at all. There, you like, against the law to use the banks, right? And if someone beat you up and took your money, that was the end of things. There was no insurance, right? Like, it was super scary if you had, it was really easy for somebody to take all your money. And so perhaps another way to frame this story is to think about how much regard this servant has for his neighbor or master's property, that he's being particularly careful with his neighbor's things, that it would have been really easy for him to just take it or to use it like as a loan himself, right? Just like, I'll spend this talent and then like I'll find a way to scrounge up another talent when the master comes back. But that he has a really high regard for the property of even his master. Which leads me to another homiletical kind of thing that you might want to play with here. The phrase that the servants get, the slaves get, that seem to be good is enter into the joy of your master. Again, that could have been enter into the joy of your father in heaven. It's the kind of a thing Matthew would say, but that's not what he says, right? Whole who's your master? Bob Dylan sort of like, you got to serve somebody. Take on the text here. You could play with that, and I think it's some fun ways.
Like, if you take this back to Manna and Mercy, right, where there's a whole thing in that Manna story about hoarding, right? And you're not supposed to just hoard it for the next day, which, I can't remember his name. Alan Story has this whole, he's a South African pastor, and he has this whole take on Manna and Mercy, where he's basically like, you shouldn't have savings. Like, it's like this argument, which just takes it to this logical, radical conclusion. And so, like, you know, it'd be one thing if he was, like, protecting, you know, his neighbor's property, if his neighbor has, like, that one piece of manna for the day. But this doesn't seem like that kind of neighbor. This neighbor clearly has enough that he can divide up. Like, he clearly has way more. Yeah. He took more manna that day than he needed, right? And so that's really what we're burying. And I feel like that's relevant. It's interesting. I don't know. It's interesting. Yeah. Because then once again, like, it flips it, where it's like this, we too quickly read God into this master character. And like you've said from the beginning, if you take that out of it, you can do very different things with it.
Shout out to local retired pastor Keith Precker here in Boulder County, who has the hottest hot take, and will tell it to your face, that churches should not have endowments.
Yeah. I mean, there's an argument.
It makes a pretty compelling case, you know.
There's an argument.
I think we're different. So it's okay. I'm okay.
That's right. I think we're
I'm not a real church.
Oh. Well, now that we figured out that sermon for you, you're welcome, preachers.
You're welcome, Sarah for Iowa. You're welcome, preachers of Iowa. And all places in between. Matt, I found some new music I like.
Oh, good job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I put them on the playlist a while back. Boulder County, Nederland based group, focus group called Elephant Revival. And I learned for the first time a couple weeks ago that Elephant Revival broke up in 2018. I missed it. You know, I've missed some important news about that factory that makes the only resin in the world to make vinyl with, burning down in February of 2020, and I missed the breakup of Elephant Revival. It was built around a romantic relationship between two people, and the romantic relationship ended, and thus ended the band. And one half of that romantic relationship is Daniel Rodriguez, who this summer released his first solo album. He's been playing, touring a lot with like all the kind of cool people like Gregory Isaacman, Koff, Gregory, you know what I'm talking about. Dudes like that, Nathaniel Rateliff. But his new album is called Sojourn of a Burning Sun. It came out in August, very into August. It's really cool. You got cool art, too. It's got a song called Colorado that's on my new, it's a new addition to my Colorado playlist. But it has a song called This Is Life. The whole album's really pretty good. But This Is Life is what I kind of think that parable, Matthew's parable, is kind of saying, like, this is life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty good. So, there you go. So I'm putting This Is Life, Daniel Rodriguez on. Then, Matt, shout out to the Peach State, which is State of the Week here on the podcast. Who knew
that
the Atlanta Hawks would play such a pivotal role in the election of our next president. My favorite hawk of all time, Matt. I don't know about yours. I'm excited to hear legitimately, but my favorite is clearly Pistol Pete Maravich, who rocked that original neon green jersey that the Hawks had back in the day. Always a huge Pistol Pete fan. Daniel, a high school alum in Clemson, South Carolina. But I'm going back to the ATL, the A-Town, with off a 1998 album, Jermaine Dupri, featuring Jay-Z, Money Ain't a Thing, which is not exactly what the song's about. It's about being so rich that you don't care about money. But I think we can make it work for this parable, you know?
Yeah.
And finally, out of Athens, Georgia, B-52s there, you know, coming up at the same time as R.E.M. Henry, your tin roof rusted. Debbie, they have an album called, a song called Debbie. That's pretty good. It's like Debbie's the lead singer in a rock, I'd never heard it before. Debbie is the lead singer in like an all-girl rock and roll band. And so in honor of Deborah, I'm putting the B-52s Debbie on the playlist.
That's great. I'm glad to know that exists. My mom's name is Debbie, so I'll have to see.
Shout out to Debbie.
I don't know. I don't know if she was into the B-52s, but let's
see. She worked for the airline industry. How's she not into the B-52s?
She did. She got out just in time. Right before they... Oh. Well, I just had a bunch of the first songs I wrote down. By the time I get to Arizona... My Public Enemy, which is actually a really good song about the Martin Luther King Day. Just check it out. Check it out by the time I get to Arizona. Philadelphia Freedom by Elton John. Waiting on those votes to come in from Philadelphia.
Elton John. You can't count on Philadelphia, man.
And, I mean, wouldn't it be great if the birthplace of the Constitution was just redeemed the soul of America. Oh, my goodness. And, of course, Georgia. Georgia on my mind, Ray Charles. But more in keeping with these texts, I've been listening on repeat just to keep myself sane to this new album from the Resistance Revival Chorus, which is just, it's just a great album. A lot of gospel folk songs, but with a real modern day twist. Ella's song from that album, and the chorus is really "We Who Believe in Freedom Cannot Rest," and it's just some really great call and response stuff. It actually makes me miss being in church where we could sing together, because it feels like that's what we need at the moment. Capitalist Blues by Layla McCullough, the Capitalist Blues. Yep, there's a song. And from the new Springsteen album, Springsteen apparently has his own vinyl factory.
Evidently.
I got my vinyl in the mail within a week.
I've got a new delivery date, November 16th, Matt. November 16th.
We'll see. Okay, I'll be
11 waiting. More days.
Bated breath. Rainmaker from the new Springsteen album. Sometimes folks need to believe in something so bad, they'll hire a rainmaker. So we'll tie that to that Matthew text.
I like it. I mean, it feels kind of like the Deborah, too, you know? Go out and see that lady underneath the tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been real.
Real definitive.